This is CliffCentral.com.
Fear is a powerful thing. I mean, it's got a lot of firepower. If you can figure out a way to wrestle that fear, to push you from behind rather than stand in front of you, that's very powerful.
Multiplying leadership, moving society. Millennial way.
You don't want to end up going after goals and dreams and neglect yourself.
Life is like a wheel, it's a boiler. What goes along comes with the one, what goes up now comes down. Be careful how you treat other people because people can say, it is what it is, it does what it means, it does it.
Welcome to the Youth Leadership Platform with your host, Bongani Tau.
See, old friend, I brought more soldiers than you did.
Youth Leadership Platform. Welcome to another exciting episode of the Youth Leadership Platform with Bongani Tau. At Simply Bongani on Twitter, Instagram, and practically every other social media platform you can think of. Today we're talking about a very fascinating topic, and that is the industry of independent filmmaking or indie filmmaking. And we have some exciting guests in studio because we're going to tackle this topic twofold. We're going to speak about the nuances in independent filmmaking, from production, distribution, pre-production, marketing, advertising, and all these different elements that make for one to be successful in the industry. And I'm joined today by very powerful guests, very young and powerful guests who've got bright futures ahead of them, because I've seen some of their work and their creativity, and I'm convinced, I'm sold. And welcome to the studio, guys. I've got you. Cheryl and Lungile.
Thank you. Welcome
to the Youth Leadership Platform. Thanks for coming, guys. Maybe let's start off the conversation with getting to know our guests, as we like to do with the opening sequence. So Cheryl, we'll start off with you, and you kindly introduce yourself and get into yourself a bit for the purposes of our listeners knowing who you are.
That is such a difficult question. My name is Cheryl. I'm a filmmaker, and I just started. I literally just started getting into the industry, actually, yeah, because I have a 9-to-5. So it was really difficult to balance that out as well, just to balance starting and the 9-to-5. But it's working out so well. I mean, with platforms like the Indie Grand Session, it makes it easy. It makes it, it gives it that smooth transition into it.
Okay.
Yeah. So I think that's...
That's you, much about in a nutshell.
Yeah, and me in a nutshell, starting out.
Lungi.
Oh, okay. Hi, guys. So my name is Lungile Mayindi. I am a Joburg indie filmmaker. I vlog, and I run a filmmaking meetup in Joburg called the Indie Film Grind Sessions. And yeah, like Cheryl, I have a 9-to-5, but I have a really ridiculous passion for filmmaking.
Yeah.
And I make movies with my friends. I vlog. I share tips. I'm very, very passionate about filmmaking. So hence, yeah, I started a meetup called Indie Film Grind Sessions, where we share tips, tricks. We talk about gear, everything that has to do about filmmaking, from funding, crowdfunding, to distribution, all around. And we just share information. So that's kind of like where we met. So
Awesome. I attended one of them, and I was it was very informative and very exciting. And I think the environment that was created, you know, the vibe as well, you know, the space that we were in, it spoke to the creative. And I think, speaking for everyone and all of us that were attending the sessions, let's start off the conversation this way. A lot of filmmakers always have, or more often than, you know, than usual, have someone that they look up to, where they like, you know, this person created this movie and that movie and that movie and that movie, and because of those movies and watching that person, you know, create those movies, that's where I developed my love for filmmaking. So, Cheryl, who is that person for you?
I have two, but I have one that is my person. Okay. I have Catherine Bigelow. I love her work and everything, but I'm obsessed with Christopher Nolan's work.
Okay.
I am extremely obsessed with how he works with structure, how he would use lighting and elements and objects just to tell you this, or how he uses the camera to tell you the story instead of the characters or what's going on. So he will use the movement of the camera. So you are watching the movement of the camera the whole time. The characters are just there to balance the narrative. But Christopher Nolan is my person.
It's fascinating that you'd say that, because some of the movies, in some of the scenes, the people literally don't have to say anything, but just watching, you can feel a certain emotion. You react to certain scenes differently. And I think it's one of those things we take lightly, just sitting at the cinema, and you take lightly how the precision behind the person deciding to shoot at that angle and to zoom in, to zoom out at a certain point, you know, the music behind it and the color grading itself, you know, what kind of emotions and feelings it invokes in a person. Very, very, very fascinating. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's a lot of effort to make a film.
Okay.
You know, I personally, well, I don't have a favorite director or filmmaker. I've got too many. But I've realized it takes so much to make a film, and obviously it sucks when there's a review that rips you apart. Like two years of work of your life is just like ripped apart. But
you get on Rotten Tomatoes and they give you like a 10%.
You know, 2 years of your life just gone like that. So it's a lot of work. It's a lot of work.
Yeah.
I mean, like, making an independent feature film is like almost impossible. You know, you have to be positive and you need to obviously work with the right people. And most of all, it's very expensive.
Yeah.
So to try and make a movie without funding is, it's really expensive. Like, it's, you know, I mean, what has helped me is, you know, making some short films with my friends. I mean, I've had the luck to go to like AFTA for 2 years.
Okay.
You know, so I've met a lot of friends that were acting, doing cinematography or whatever. So obviously there's a network of us. So I can always say, yo, Graham, dude, I need like, I've got a film. I want to shoot this Saturday. Can you get like two actresses and one other guy? And the next thing, we make it happen, you know. Mm. But I mean, I can't imagine how hard it is for someone who didn't even go to film school, doesn't even have that background. I mean, like, to even buy a camera, the cheapest camera is like 5,000 rand. Like, where do you get that if you're not even working, or where do you even start? So it's really, really almost impossible, but it is possible, you know, and it is doable. But I mean, coming back to the indie film grind, I'm like overselling it here. But I mean, I guess it's one of the reasons why we started that, because we realized how hard it is for an independent filmmaker. It's really tough. And yes, there are like other ways and avenues to get funders and stuff, but people look at you and they're like, you don't have Denzel in your movie. Why must I give you money? You know? I mean, no one trusts like young independent filmmakers.
Yeah.
So it's up to them to try and make it themselves, and then you can show people like, yo, look, this is what I can do. You know, but it's a hard journey.
So what are some movies that individually you've watched and you've thought to yourself that one day I want to produce or create something of this magnitude?
Well, for me, a lot of that has changed. I mean, my most favorite film director is Quentin Tarantino.
Okay.
You know, his films are like amazing, you know. But then I discovered a guy called Joe Swanberg. He makes mumblecore feature films. So
okay.
So what mumblecore is, it's like a genre of filmmaking, indie filmmaking, where they make they tell stories about people in their 20s, and it's very low budget, and it's like kind of like very minimal locations, very naturalistic. Some of his films are improvised. So, I mean, that's a guy that I look up to. Like, as much as I want to make a movie like Quentin Tarantino with like $90 million budget, I want to get there eventually. But for now, I look up to Joe Swanberg because he used to make movies with his friends.
Which movie from Joe can a lot of us...
So know? There's a movie called Drinking Buddies.
Okay.
It's really crazy that that movie was shot with no script. So the whole movie is improvised.
What?
Yeah.
And it's amazing.
Yeah, yeah. It's really good. It's a really good movie. It's not like an action-packed movie, but it's about relationships and people in their 20s. It's a really good movie. And the fact that even before he made that movie, he made like 6 feature films in a year. That's like crazy. No funding. So that's what I look up to. That's kind of, yeah.
Cheryl?
Yeah.
A movie?
Yes.
Stands out for me. Recently, not exactly recently, I think about a year ago.
Okay.
It was Interstellar.
Okay.
Yeah.
Why that specific?
Chris Nolan.
Yeah, Chris Nolan. Yeah, it was. No, I watched it and it was really amazing. Like, it was just, you know, those movies where you, my favorite part of a film is the end. So if if your ending is like, it's amazing. Yeah, the film for me stands out. So Interstellar was really amazing, and I was already into Christopher Nolan's work and everything. Yeah, so I think for me, and after watching Interstellar, I got so interested in. Well, I have always loved astronomy,
okay,
and science, but I've never really been able to write a science fiction.
Okay,
but after Interstellar, I was able to write a science fiction feature film about time, because it just opened up a whole a whole other world for me.
So what Ava DuVernay has in store for us is going to be fascinating for you, because it's a wrinkle in time.
Yes.
And yes, you know, the whole concept and ideation of parallel universes.
Yes.
And things like that. I'm quite fascinated myself to see that. I can't wait, actually. Yeah. So take us through the nuances of pre-production. What are some of the things that independent filmmakers need to learn and need to understand when making a movie, or if they decide to get into the space at all?
Gear,
okay,
cast, crew. You need a lot of help, because you have no money.
Yeah.
You need a lot of favors. You need, right now, I'm producing Lungi's movie,
okay,
called Last Owned, and the sessions have helped us so much with casting, crew, somebody who knows somebody, like just connections.
Yeah.
Because you don't have money, you don't have anything. You're using what you can to put this whole thing together, and we meet as much as we can to get this movie going. So I'm doing my part. The other person's doing their part. Lungi's doing his part. So we're trying to reach out to designers for clothes, to makeup artists, you know, young people like myself and him, who are trying to come up and all of that. So we're trying to reach out to everybody, and then we are also out of our personal capacity, you know, paying for some stuff, organizing everything, just to make sure that this movie actually comes together. It's a lot of work. It really is. And we have 9-to-5s. I mean, that's just...
So balancing everything else.
Yeah, it's a nightmare. Yeah. It's a nightmare.
It's a lot time consuming. From your side, Lungi?
I think the biggest thing is that everyone has ideas for a film or a story.
Okay.
Even if you're not into film, you've always had, some people have had, it's like, what if we had a TV show that, I don't know, had like dragons in it, you know, or whatever, you know? So I think the biggest thing that people can do is to start with a story that they know they can shoot.
Okay.
So for instance, you look at what you have, you're like, okay, I've got my mom's house, I can literally shoot a film at my mom's house.
Yeah.
You know, instead of saying, oh, I want to go shoot at like, you know, Santon Mall, we have to ask permission. And like, you're putting yourself to, yes, you can, but I think people need to stop coming up with ideas and not executing. That's like the biggest problem,
okay,
you know, the gap between ideation and actually execution. So
sure.
I believe that people need to look at what they have and write a story about what they have. If they have like 3 actresses friends that they know, even if they're friends, write a story for them, you know, and then, you know, get a camera, borrow a camera, you know, you can even hire it from a lot of these hiring places if you can't shoot it on a cell phone. I mean, a lot of people are very doubtful of shooting on cell phones because obviously it seems unprofessional. It's like, who's going to take you seriously? Like, hey, come shoot a movie with me. I'm shooting on my cell phone. But the weird thing is, like, the technology is there. I mean, people have fancy phones these days that shoot like HD and 4K. There was even a short film called The High Fantasy from Cape Town. It was shot on an iPhone 7 and it went to the Toronto International Festival. And it looks good.
Yeah.
You know, as much as yes, you want to have quality, but you want to tell your story, which is like the number one thing.
Mm.
I mean, people used to watch these Nigerian movies that are bad quality, but because the story is good,
they watch them anyway.
You know, like, you know, so.
And the industry has grown. They make a heck of a lot of money because they've got that viewership and, and that fan base and on lock.
They've secured their audience.
Yeah.
They started making movies and they just made a lot of them and built an audience and obviously improved and made the industry better and the stories better. And that's how I think we need to start. We need to stop making excuses in terms of, no, I don't have money. I'm going to get funding. I meet so many people that are like, oh, I don't have funding. Yeah, I know I've got a script, but I'm just going to apply for funding. Yeah. Like, you will never make your film.
It's interesting that you mentioned the use of phones. How does one, you know, turn their phone into like a camera that's capable of more than just, you know, what a phones can can shoot on their own?
Yeah, so well, there are apps, you know, that you can get.
Okay.
There are free ones and some are not free. So whether you have an iPhone, you have an Android or an iOS, you can get an app called Filmic Pro.
Okay.
It costs $200. So you can get it on Google Play or on iTunes and then obviously install it on your phone. And then it has all the controls that cameras have on your phone.
Okay.
So you can shoot slow motion, change the frame rate, do all these things, and then obviously shoot on your film and then obviously get that footage off your phone into your computer and start editing it. So it's really that easy.
Okay.
It literally $200.
Yeah.
There's even cheaper free ones that are like open camera, which is an Android-based one, and you just install it on your phone from Google Play, and you start shooting, and you can control it. It makes the camera, your phone camera, better than what it actually is.
Okay.
So people can start there, you know, yeah.
You got, both of you expressed, contempt with, you know, the hustle that goes with sourcing funding for making films.
Mm-hmm.
What are some ways that independent filmmakers can actually source fundings or raise money to actually start on their script?
I mean, most of the time you don't really need money. I know this sounds weird, but you need resources.
Yeah.
So personally, what I've done, let's say from our film, we're like, okay, cool. We've got a film. We need clothes for our actors.
Yeah.
And we say, okay, cool. We need brand new clothes because we want the actors to look good. So we're like, okay, cool. We need fashion designers. If we make a post and we say, yo, we're looking for fashion designers that have amazing clothes, if you give us your clothes, we'll to use for our actors, dress our actors, we'll showcase your brand in our film.
Sure.
In our, the actors, the characters will talk about your brand. We'll even talk about your brand in our marketing of the film. So you see, that's already a shortcut to kind of get stuff.
Okay.
Or whether someone, we're looking for a location or a restaurant or a bar, we go there, we're like, yo, we're indie filmmakers, we're making a little indie feature film. We would really love to shoot here, but we can't pay you, but we can showcase your venue. You know, that's marketing for them. I mean, product placement is really big in Hollywood movies.
Okay.
You know?
Yeah.
And it's cheaper advertising for them. I mean, all they have to do is give us access to their place or access to their brand, like their clothing or brands and stuff like that. So that's one thing you can do. But I mean, another one is crowdfunding.
Okay.
So there is a website called Kickstarter and another one called Indiegogo. So basically, you make a video and you say, hi, my name is Lungile. I'm making a film. It's called blah, blah, blah. I need 10,000 rand to make my film. And it's not just enough to just make a video. So you make a video, you say, this is my team. This is my story. This is why I'm making my film. This is how much I need. And you even make a presentation of like, this is how I'm going to spend the money, right? And then you even motivate the people in terms of rewards and say, if you give me $1, you'll get a shout out from the crew.
Yeah.
If you give me $5, you'll get a shout out and a signed digital copy of the script or a digital download of the film. So you're enticing the audience to actually have a reason
giving them incentives.
Yes, you know. So it's very popular amongst indie filmmakers. And even if you don't succeed with raising the money, what's nice about it is that it teaches you how to pitch your film. So whether you don't get to your goal, whenever you say you have a film, you send someone a link of your project where it has everything, your story, your characters, your crew, why you're making this film. And then a lot of great things can happen from that, you know. So,
or you could, I think just another way to keep your film minimal because you're independent.
Yeah.
You could shoot at one location or you could shoot trailers. So what I do with my films, we shot a trailer last year with my friend, and it looks legit. Like, it looks great. I say so myself. I didn't think it would come out the way it did because I shot it with my cell phone. I mean, even the lighting is great. There was even fake fire stuff at the location.
Where can we watch that?
It's not anywhere, but I can put it up and then I'll send you the link and then you can share it.
Yeah, you were saying?
Yes, I will need my friend's permission. Anyway, so you could shoot trailers. You could actually, because you have this full script and you know what scenes you want to go into the trailer, you could literally just shoot those six scenes and sell the and package it nicely and then sell the 2 minute. So instead of just going and asking for funding, like applications and presentations, and like you could take all the different routes, but you could just almost present it visually.
Yeah.
So you could shoot the six scenes, package it nicely, and then sell it that way. So when the investors and executive producers and people who, like, you want to be interested in the brands, when you play it, I mean, if they buying into whatever you're playing right now,
yeah.
I mean, that's another way.
Okay, we'll switch up the conversation a bit. Let's talk about some of the films that were made in South Africa, and one in particular, actually. Tell me, Sweet Something. Mm. We tried to conjure a rom-com of sorts, and it went wrong in a lot of ways. And people didn't go and watch it. So from a perspective of people that work behind the scenes, what do you feel went wrong in shooting that particular film?
Oh, I don't like
it. I know.
Okay, I watched the film. Okay. The film is beautiful.
Okay.
Like, you know, the quality of the film looks good, you know. I mean, okay, let's be honest. Like, going to the cinema is expensive. That's the first thing.
All right.
You know, and, you know, the truth is, as much as we tell people, please watch my movie because it's South African, that's not good enough.
Yeah.
Because people are used to watching a lot of movies. You know, so when you make a movie, you need to understand that when people get to the cinema, they're going to see a rom-com with Will Smith.
And
they're going to see an action. Then they're going to be like, oh, should I watch that because it's South African? Like, you know, people want to be entertained. And if maybe there wasn't a lot of effort maybe put into marketing, or maybe the story was a little weak.
Is that what you feel?
You know, there was a lot of elements that were not... Oh, my God. Okay, yeah. So there was a lot of things weren't, like, working, you know. Audience is very smart. You know, you can't just throw beautiful imageries at them and hope that they're going to just like your film.
Okay.
You know, obviously the performances have to be, like, on point. And even the story needs to be engaging because people have seen a lot of romantic movies. So what's different about yours?
Yeah.
You know, if I watch them like, oh, that's very similar to that other movie. Like, why must I watch you? You know, so maybe, I don't know if it's about originality, you know, because people do watch them. There was the other one, A Love...
It's a four-letter word.
Which people receive, you know? So people do watch something if it's really good enough, you know? They do. So I think it's just like making an intelligent film that will entice the audience.
I think that's a very good point. Don't underestimate your audience.
Okay.
I mean, if you look at how we consume content, the kind of content we consume, and then you have, like, it's everything always goes back to distribution.
Okay.
All the time. You have to understand how and why your audience is consuming a particular kind of content in a specific kind of way.
Yeah.
You can't just make a movie because it's beautiful and you expect us to go and watch
celebrities.
Yes, and yeah, and half the time, with South African movies, I mean, I honestly feel like most of the narratives are a little bit weak.
Okay.
Yeah, and I think that's why the story is.
What can we do differently though, as filmmakers in South Africa? Because there's a lot of movies that are coming out.
I think we need to take risks.
Yes.
You know, the problem is that people need to convince investors and take risks. There's a whole lot of different stories, untold stories.
Amazing untold.
You know, stories. We have myths. We have like. It's a lot of stuff. Yeah. So to try and make the generic boy meets girl, okay, they fall in love with it, and it's like, what's different about it? And also market the films. I mean, some of the films you only find out on the day
of release
that, this film is playing, and it's like, it hasn't been marketed. You know, I personally think marketing is not that expensive. There's Facebook, there's Twitter, there's Instagram. You can pay influencers. You can even use Facebook marketing. It's not that expensive.
Yeah.
You know? And like putting effort into marketing and getting people to know the film. Not like, there's a film coming out, please support. We don't even know. You know, we didn't know.
We don't even know who the cast is.
Yeah.
They didn't sell it enough to the audience. That's why I say don't underestimate your audience. Lungi was showing me what Bright did. There's a movie that came out of Netflix called Bright.
Okay. Bright. With Will Smith.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah, yeah. He was playing as the premiere.
Mm-hmm.
Oh my God! Like, if you hear about that premiere, there's no way you're not gonna watch the movie. So yeah, in South Africa, we don't have the hype. Is not there. We hardly ever know anything about the movie. If you're a filmmaker, obviously you will go in all the way in.
Yeah.
But if you're just an audience, I mention movies to my colleagues and people around me all the time, and they don't know those movies. And these are South African movies. These are beautiful South African movies.
Yeah.
And they're like, no, we don't know. But they'll tell you all about these Hollywood blockbusters.
So a lot of these youngsters, myself included, we tend to think that to make it in this industry, you have to be under some big company or, you know, get a commissioning gig with some of the big broadcasters and then start shoot for the first time and then put your content out there. But we are oblivious to other avenues to display our content.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I wanted to explore for the next minute.
Mm-hmm.
What are some other avenues that we can put our content out there and put ourselves eventually, you know, out there for people to recognize and know who we are?
I mean, there's platforms like Vimeo On Demand.
Okay.
So you can literally put your film on there and have people pay for it. And Vimeo takes 10% of the profits. And you keep 90, which is completely different. It's a different deal from what you'd get from Mr. Kinnickel. And also, your film can be about whatever you want. There's no brand guidelines. Like, let's say if you make a movie from Zansi Magic, it has to tick certain boxes.
Yeah.
You make a movie for ETV, you have to tick certain boxes. So there's a lot of these on-demand brands coming out. You know, there's Black, there's Kwese TV. You know, even Facebook has an on-demand platform called Facebook Watch.
Okay.
You know, there's Netflix. Amazon, there's so many
as well. Yeah.
You know,
there's so many.
Yeah. So it's just a matter of researching how do I get my movie on iTunes? You know, usually you get through there via an aggregator.
Yeah.
You know, obviously you submit your film and then you wait a few months and if they like it, then they put it on. You know, or Hulu, which is kind of like similar to Amazon. So and there's a lot of on-demand like brands coming up now, you know,
which is great for
indie
filmmakers.
Okay.
Mm. Yeah.
I'd say we have the conversation a bit longer, or even some other day. But I know there's indie grind sessions.
Yes.
So just tell us when is the next session, so we can learn more about independent filmmaking and how do we reach you guys.
Okay. So we have the indie film grind sessions every first Saturday of the month at Bromfontein at the Once in Joburg Cinema Room, Once in Joburg Hotel Cinema Room. So we share a whole bunch of tips and tricks and a whole bunch of stuff about filmmaking, and we have fantastic speakers. We even have people, if you have a idea for a short film or a web series, you come and you pitch it to us, and then we give you real life feedback about your idea, and maybe you find collaborators. So if you Google indie film grind sessions, we're on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. We post a lot of content and tips. And as for me, you can obviously also find me on social media at Lungile Mayindi. That's Lungile, M-A-Y-I-N-D-I. So Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, Snapchat, Voom, all of them.
The
so,
works.
Yeah,
Cheryl?
So I'm very, yeah.
On my social media, my Twitter handle is Cheryl Flume, Cheryl with a C and double R.
Okay.
And then Instagram is Cheryl Mojapelo, as in M-O-J-A-P-E-L-O. And Flume Studios is the company. It's my company. So Flume Studios as well. It's Flume Studios on Twitter, Flume Studios on Instagram.
Awesome. So everyone in the independent filmmaking space can send you questions directly
anything,
to Cheryl
if Flumes they need help.
And Lungile, and come to the Indie Grind sessions and learn more. Mm-hmm. We're going to take a quick break and we're going to come back and we're going to speak to people in front of the camera this time. The filmmaking sessions on Youth Leadership Platform. We're switching up the conversation right now and we're talking to people in front of the camera. And if you have been listening, you'll know that we were talking behind the scenes about filmmaking. And all the details will be on our social media platforms and they'll be on our websites as well. Joining me now is everything that we as especially black kids grew up on. If you've seen anything from Jacob's Cross to Home Affairs to Zabalaza, you know, Chesa, everything, you'll know who my guests are for this part of the segment. I've got Graham and Zizi Peteni. Zizi Peteni was it Vuyo on Home Affairs? Vuyo's
my character name was Tabani.
Tabani was Vuyo's coach, right?
Yes.
So we've got Vuyo's coach in the building today to teach us a bit of discuss in about the industry and acting. Welcome to the studio, guys, and welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
Thanks for coming. Thanks for coming.
Great stuff.
Let's get on with it. I guess straight away, what would you describe acting to be? Sheesh, I just got into it. Nah.
Yeah, you just got into it.
Straight in there.
Yeah, you don't beat about the bush.
No. What is acting?
Look, it has a lot of different meanings to a lot of different people, but okay. Obviously you're asking a direct question to us. And for me, and I was having this partly with Zizi earlier on, and I said acting is as much as it's psychological, but it's pragmatic.
Okay.
And it's living or portraying a particular character and making sure that you knock off the details. So it's not like, okay, I'm playing this particular person and it's exciting.
Yeah.
But you have to be detailed about that particular person. And acting is also believing, because if I believe you, if I believe the character you're playing, if I'm drawn into that particular character,
yeah,
then you're doing something right. It may not be everything, but you're doing something right.
Mm-hmm.
So acting has a lot of definitions to a lot of different people. But I would also like to say that sometimes acting is presenting but also sometimes acting is representation.
Okay.
Yeah. So don't get me into it. Otherwise, I'll keep going.
ZZ?
Wow, my brother is deep.
Yeah.
Acting is a storytelling, man. All of us as writers, producers, directors, when we come together for a production, we're all focused on telling a story.
Yeah.
You know, and I believe that actors are the life force. A writer can write the story on paper, and a director can have his vision, you know, his visual vision. And the producer can get the contacts and the networks to get the funding and the marketing, right?
Sure.
But the actors, they are the blood. They bring the story to life.
Yes.
You know? Not that they're the most important part of the crew, but they bring the story. They like Graham said, they find the details of the crew. You can get given a character brief, but as an actor, you don't just read the brief and the script and just deliver. You go home and you find out the details, you know? What did the director and writer not think about that you can add, you know? The layers you add to the character, you know, and to the whole story, you know, eventually. It's storytelling. Sure.
It's a very taxing industry, yeah?
The industry in general as a whole?
Yeah, even the profession as a professional actor.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So Where do you get the, I don't know what to even call it, the energy or...
Inspiration
to get into certain characters. Because when they give you a character brief, you literally need to think about all the specs that you've been given. And because it's not who you are on a day-to-day basis, as much as there may be similarities here and there, but you need to get yourself into that and portray that for all of us to appreciate.
I think every character is inspiring, and I'm saying that because every character is different, and if there's anything that I know about actors is that they would love to delve into different type of characters.
Okay.
Right. So some actors are enthusiastic, some actors are melodramatic, some actors are just you know, introverts. You know, but that's interesting nonetheless, because you get to understand this human being, and when you get into the shoes of that particular person, when you get into his understanding and the essence of what makes that particular character, you find it more interesting. And that's what actually inspires us to actually keep going. It's when you've got it. It's when you've got the character, then you breathe, you know, the life of that particular character.
Sure.
That just keeps you, that just pushes you more and more and more and more.
Wow.
Zizi, what are your sentiments on this?
Oh, man. Sure.
Do you have any rituals or stuff that you do to be like, you know what, I'm prepping myself to get into this particular character?
As I said, man, acting is about storytelling, and as Ulungile said earlier, it's about the passion.
Okay.
You know, I have a passion for people. I love studying people wherever I go. I'm interested in different types of people, especially people that are different from me.
Okay.
And the one thing I learn as an actor, that I never expected to learn, is understanding other people. The more I act, the more characters I get presented with, the more I learn about humanity and the psychology, why certain people do what they do, you know, to a fault. Like, I can be too understanding sometimes. I understand if someone does something that makes me upset, I can sit down and understand it before I lose my temper. I can understand, okay, this person, they think like this. They were raised this way. They grew up in this place. And, you know, which is different from my life experience. Mm-hmm. You know, so I think as actors, it's a journey. Like you said, there can be similarities between yourself and the character. As much as you may pretend you're getting into another person, you know, and removing yourself from it, a lot of yourself is what you actually find, you know, the good and the bad aspects of oneself, you know. We all have aspects in ourselves, positive, negative. We all have different types of thoughts, you know, that we choose to suppress. But when you get into a character, you get given a chance to explore. What if? What if I was, you know, born in this situation, or I was first faced with this circumstance? How would I really react to it? Or what if I reacted this way? Where would that road lead me, you know? But because I'm a sane person, I'm going to take this choice and go this way. But what if I did that? And I think that's why people get excited when they get into a new character. You know, like, it's a chance, it's a fictional, you know, and creative chance to explore.
Yeah.
If I made different choices in life, because essentially that's the only thing that makes us different as people.
Mm.
The choices you make exactly. when you wake up, you make a decision. This is the kind of person I want to be today. This is how I'm going to treat other people that I meet. And it's a decision.
Mm.
And acting gives you a chance to explore if I made different decisions,
mm-hmm.
you know, and if I had a different background, history, how would I think? How would I function? And what would be my influences be, you know? So
let's get into some of the characters that you've gotten a chance to play. In The Dark Knight, we have one of the most celebrated villains over a hero of all time, portrayed by Heath Ledger, which was the Joker.
Yeah.
In one of the scenes, it's a very iconic scene as well. There's two ships and there's people in either ship. So there's ordinary civilians and prisoners. And he says, "I've got a bomb on each ship." And the detonator for one of the bombs is swapped around. So the detonator for the bomb of the civilians is with the prisoners and vice versa. And then he says, if you guys do not bomb the other guys, then the other guys are going to bomb the other guys.
Yeah.
And if none of you act on what I'm telling you,
yeah.
I'm going to bomb both ships anyway.
Yeah.
So for Heath Ledger, it's one of the most important characters he played, and teaching us a lesson on morality.
Mm-hmm.
Because on one of the ships, they were talking about how these are bad people and deserve to die, and the other guys were just looking out for themselves. And it's like, so where does morality come into place in society? Is it a social construct, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Such powerful, enigmatic narratives that we could draw from there. In some of the characters that you've been able to play, what are some of the moments like the one that Heath Ledger had in The Dark Knight have you had, and what experiences and lessons have you learned from that?
Mm. I'm going to let you start because you're a bit of a veteran, so I'm going to let you start this one.
At the beginning of my career, I got to play nice guys, you know?
Yeah.
Good guys. This was about 10 years ago, maybe about 12 years ago.
Yeah.
I did my first big drama I started Home Affairs in 2006.
Sure.
You know? But yeah, 12 years ago. It was a nice guy role, you know, sweet guy, romantic guy, just, you know, super understanding guy, you know. Towards the end, he started, you know, being a bit negative. But there's a drama that I did a few years after that called Insiga, where I played a husband who was very abusive towards his spouse. And I'd never been married at that point. And the certain elements of that relationship that I had not experienced myself, really, but I had enough to know, and I knew enough people to do research with and on. But yeah, the negativity that I had to draw from myself for that particular character, abusing my wife, beating my wife, you know, assaulting my wife in all sorts of ways, it took a lot out of me. I had to go to a dark place that I'd never done before, and I was still young back then. still am, but you know, I was still pretty fresh in the acting game. Yeah, man, I had to go deep in myself. I did not like myself during that time of that shoot, you know. I was very quiet. I didn't talk much to the other actors.
Yeah.
You know, I was just in my own space, you know, and I tried to feed myself negative thoughts.
Hmm.
My character was a very angry character. He was very angry about life. His situation is he got fired from his job, didn't have money, you know, his wife had more money than him. He was stressed, frustrated, depressed, all these things, was drinking over, you know, and yeah, I had to go to that place, man. And it was very dark, and I'm glad I came out of it. I hope I was unscathed. I hope I was unscathed by it.
But, we hope so too.
But I don't think I've never done that since.
Yeah.
I've not received the role that has required me since then to go, you know, that negative.
That
and
deep.
Honestly, I'm a bit scared of it.
Yeah.
I'm a bit scared because I was almost lost there. I almost got lost, you know, but it's important to be able to get in character and have rituals, like you said, to get out of that character.
Yeah.
And just remember who you are But you know, when you're acting, man, you want to get it right. You want to get it perfect, you know, and you want the people to believe. I don't think people would believe that I can be a bad guy, you know, like, you know, angry guy, abusive type of guy, you know, guy who hits his woman, you know. But I had to be convincing, you know, from my face to the way I spoke to the way I walked, you know, like. And yeah, man, I did what I had to do.
Yeah.
Like I said, when I woke up, I brushed my teeth with anger. I woke up angry and
brush your teeth.
Yeah, man. And I just told myself I'm an angry man. Life is bad. Everything is terrible. Like, I had to have those thoughts in my head, you know, to get there.
Graham?
There's a couple that actually stand out for me, but I'd probably go for MTV Sugar as the most standing out, playing a teacher that has a relationship with a student. So that was very interesting for me, you know, especially having to ask her to have an abortion, you know, and just, you know, just give her money just like that, have an abortion without, you know, with a poker face on, without any emotions sort of reflecting. So yeah, for me that was a challenge, and I think the director as well, Thabang, you know, was great in showing me how, you know, suave and, you know, and how cool he plays it and stuff like that, you know, all the character nuances and all of that. So for me, that actually stood out. Besides, I'd say, and there was Tempe Pushes where I played a psychopath, you know. the funny thing is, I love to think that I look like a good guy, but I get mostly bad guys.
Yeah,
I get to play a lot of bad guys. So, which is actually something that actually pushes me as well. You know, it's something out of my sort of out of my borders or whatever. So yeah, it does push me. It does, because I want to understand the psychology of villains.
Yeah,
you know. Yeah,
$1 million question. Does it not scare you? You know, the parallel characters that exist in us. The fact that you can reach into yourself and look for that bad person and find that person, portray that person, and sell that person to the world, and still try and maintain that other person that we know. The fact that these two people actually exist, if shove came to push, we can actually see this character that they want you to get into.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's the beauty about it. Because as much as you are this composed good guy going, okay, wait until your girlfriend dumps you.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Sure.
Wait until that moment comes, and then you transform completely to another different person. Sheesh. You see what I mean?
Yeah.
So you have this person within you, but acting allows you to confront that person.
Okay.
Do you know what I mean? To live with that person. When the day comes for that person to manifest, you as an actor know, okay, I've been here in character, you know. And so sometimes, and I don't know if you've actually been through this, sometimes we store certain experiences, certain emotions, right, in real life. We're like, okay, cool. We're not going to play them in real life. We're going to hold them up until a certain time when we get to on scene, and then we play that particular part. It's confusing, but he's an actor. He'd understand.
Yeah.
So yeah. So, but all of these bad characters allow you to confront that particular person and not, you know, because sometimes the worst person we want to confront is ourselves, is, you know, the bad side of ourselves.
Yeah.
So if I can look into me, right, through acting and say, dude, you, and, you know, I don't want to say these words, but you know what I mean?
Yes.
Then I'm being honest with myself. And the more I'm actually honest with myself, the more I can easily steer myself into the right direction.
Sheesh.
Sure.
And who would have thought about the intricacies of acting from this perspective?
Yeah.
That it allows you to face that side of you that it came out, it's, you know, it wouldn't be great for anyone and everyone that's around you.
Yeah.
But because you've portrayed that character, you know how to handle that character.
Yes.
Which is something a lot of us do not get to on a day-to-day basis.
Exactly. Look, most forms of arts are therapeutic.
Okay.
Most forms of art help you overcome psychologically.
Okay.
Do you know what I mean?
Sure.
So acting is also therapeutic. As much as we use it as a, you know, as a craft, but acting is also healing. Hmm. Do you know what I mean?
Sure.
So yes. I'm just confirming what you're trying to say.
An outlet. It gives you an outlet, man.
Yeah.
Let out, like you said, you hold some stuff in, you know. We all experience loss in our lives, and not even some people don't cry when someone they love passes away, you know. Where does that emotion go?
Exactly.
Do you take it out at work on your partner? Like, where does it go? It goes somewhere. It doesn't just fade away, you know. So yeah, man, when you get to play characters that require a lot of emotion, you think of a similar situation in your life, you know. If you haven't had something as extreme, you are forced to use a lot of your imagination. That, you know, what if I was really honest with myself?
Yeah.
Like, I'm really upset that this person, you know, died.
Yes.
You know, I wasn't ready. And it, you know, I understand it, that people die, you know, mentally. Psychologically, we all understand, okay, we're not here forever on this earth. But if someone you love, imagine the person you love the most passes away.
Mm.
How do you really want to react?
Yeah.
And what does society tell you should do when that happens?
Yeah. Mm.
Stay calm. Shed a few tears maybe with your family.
Be a man.
But in reality, you want to punch something.
Yeah.
You know, you want to
do something about it.
You want to go to the ocean and shout it out, you know. God, why? You know. So yeah, man.
Well, thanks a lot for coming and hanging with us, the Youth Leadership Platform. We really appreciate your presence and the pearls of wisdom that you guys have given us. And hopefully we'll be in touch with these kinds of narratives as we attend more of the sessions and get to mix and mingle. So how do people reach you on social media?
On social media, I am Graham_MK. That's Insta, that's Twitter. Yeah, Graham, Graeme, _MK.
Okay, cool. Zizi?
Me, I'm old school, man. I'm trying to be advanced, but at the moment I'm just on Facebook.
Yeah.
My page is called Zizana Peteni.
Okay.
That's my full name, Zizana, Zizana Peteni, Peteni. And I've got two profiles, Zizi Peteni and Zizi Peteni 2.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, man.
Awesome. YLP Cliff Central on Twitter and Instagram, and Youth Leadership Platform on Facebook. It is at Simply Bongani across all social media platforms. Thank you for joining us for this episode of Youth Leadership Platform.
This is CliffCentral.com.